You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me back.
We went biking last weekend. Which was actually just like yesterday, right?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Down south, it was nice.
Oh, say that meme you saw about daylight savings. That was funny.
Did we do it? Did we save the daylight?
I thought that was funny.
It is funny.
That was like daylight savings was yesterday too.
Yeah, that's right.
Although in Arizona, we don't observe daylight savings time.
No.
I think we're like always on daylight savings time or something like that. Anyways.
Yeah.
So we're always saving daylight.
Yeah, I've never understood that. It's confusing, but yeah, something like that. The weather is turning. It's getting colder. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
We went to Nogales.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That was kind of cool.
That was cool.
It's like being in Mexico.
I wish we had more reasons to go to Nogales.
Yeah, we discovered the interesting fact that 90% of Nogales' population lives in Mexico. There's like 300,000 people that live in Nogales, Mexico, and about 20,000 that live in Nogales, Arizona.
Yeah, when we were at dinner at the Velvet Elvis, I heard someone on a different table saying, oh, it's half in Mexico and half in America. And I thought about correcting her.
Yeah.
But I didn't. Because I think it's commonly thought to be half and half. But it's
yeah.
Not.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
The architecture is really beautiful down there.
Yeah. It is. You should go deeper into Mexico.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you like that.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably would consider Nogales a little junky.
Yeah.
But one day we'll go down farther into Mexico.
Yeah.
Until then, we're reading Heidegger.
Great. We're on section 30.
Section 30 of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event.
Page
53. Page 53
in the book.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and start reading?
Great. 30. Inceptual thinking as meditation is essentially as the carrying out and preparing for the resonating and the interplay. First of all, transition, and as such is a down-going. In the transition, meditation is carried out, and meditation is necessarily meditation on oneself. This indicates, however, that such thinking is still related to us, ourselves, and thus to the human being, and requires a new determination of the essence of that being. Insofar as, in the modern era, that essence is postulated as consciousness and self-consciousness, it seems that the transitional meditation must become a new clarification of self-consciousness. For one thing, we cannot simply bypass the current standing of self-consciousness, in which self-consciousness is more a matter of calculation. The basic experience of inceptual thinking would therefore indeed concern beings in the sense of contemporary human beings, their situation, and thus the, quote, reflection of humans on, quote, themselves.
Yeah. What do you think?
Should I keep reading?
I think we could talk a little about that.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So right out of the gate, we see that inceptual thinking, in a sense, is meditation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Inceptual thinking is distinguished from thinking by Heidegger. What is inceptual thinking? How is it different than thinking? Well, if we think of inceptual thinking as meditation and what we now think of as meditation, then we discover a difference between thinking and meditation. What is the difference between thinking and meditation? That's a big subject of this book. And of course, Heidegger here in the 1930s, following at least 100 years of heavily German scholarship that was bringing the Eastern philosophies to Europe, is using this word meditation and instituting, as we've said before, a kind of Easternization of Western thought, shall we say. So a lot of what this book is talking about is what meditation is. And there are so many books on meditation in English by, you know, English writers. And then there are billions of books, billions probably, on meditation by authors that very few of us over here can read because they're in Chinese and Japanese and Vietnamese and in Hindi and all that. You know, meditation is a massive global subject. So Heidegger's giving his little two cents here in this book. And he says, meditation is essentially as the carrying out and preparing for the resonating and the interplay, first of all, transition, and as such is a down going. And he's playing etymology games there. Transition is übergang, and going down or down going is untergang. Übergang really means going across, and untergang really means going under. So for some reason, übergang and untergang in his mind kind of imply each other, which I suppose they do. If you're going across something, you're also going under something else. You're always over something and under something at the same time.
It also reminds me of like the idea of grounding. I think of grounding as a down going. Maybe there's something there.
There's a great book by Sloterdijk, the German philosopher, who's like in his 90s now, amazing writer. I can't remember what the book is called. I read it a long time ago, but it essentially is an entire book, the way Sloterdijk does, about the verticality of human thought, that the metaphor of going up or down can be found throughout the thousands of years of discussing how humans orient themselves to God, to logic, to the basis of things, to circumspection, blah, blah, blah. And so, grounding is, of course, thought of as going down because the ground is beneath us. But it's interesting to deconstruct that and sort of say, well, is grounding really a going down? And what does it mean to go down logically, you know? I think the first interesting thing I'm going to go on and on, right?
Yeah.
The first interesting thing he points out is that meditation is both the carrying out and the preparing. So right away, it's a doing, but it's also a preparing to do at the same time for the resonating and the interplay. Now, what are those? The resonating and the interplay. Now, the resonating and the interplay, in a sense, the resonating comes from the interplay, and the interplay is, as far as I remember and can tell, is the interplay between Dasein and Bang. And so Dasein would be the meditator, and Bang would be the meditated in, or the meditated upon. And the interplay between them through meditation, almost like the sound, almost like a bow going across a string, then creates a resonating. Mm-hmm. So meditation is sonorous. It's interregional. It's a doing and a preparing to do at the same time. And it's a transition. So it's a moving across or over from one thing to another. And it's a going down deeper into things. So we have like 9 different qualities mm-hmm. of meditation right here in this one paragraph. So in the transition, meditation is carried out, and meditation is necessarily a meditation on oneself. Now that is a very heavy statement. Mm-hmm. Meditation is necessarily meditation on oneself. There's a lot of people that would disagree with that. Mm-hmm. it's a very strong statement. Mm-hmm. Many people would say, no, meditation is meditation on the other, or meditation is meditation on the void, or meditation is meditation on whatever you choose to meditate on. He says, meditation is necessarily meditation on oneself. We'll have to discover why. This indicates, however, that such thinking is still related to us ourselves and thus to the human being and requires a new determination of the essence of that being. So meditation, in order to be sort of real and being necessarily related to ourselves and thus and to the human being in general, this self that meditation is necessarily hooked to, we need to newly determine the essence of it. Insofar as in the modern era, that essence is postulated as consciousness and self-consciousness, it seems that the transitional meditation must become a new clarification of self-consciousness. So in the modern era, the essence of human being, the essence of the self, is put forth as the idea of consciousness and all the many ideas about what consciousness is. So he says we need to re-clarify what self-consciousness is. For one thing, we cannot simply bypass the current standing of self-consciousness. Meaning, for most importantly, we can't just let self-consciousness remain what it currently is discussed as, which is a matter of calculation. Mm-hmm. So self-consciousness as a matter of calculation is something that we cannot just fully accept and pass on by as given. Mm-hmm. So what does he mean, self-consciousness as calculation? Well, calculation is determination of quantities and series and formulas in a propositional string, resulting in true or false results. And self-consciousness as a calculation is a very kind of mathocentric, scientist-centric determination of what self-consciousness is. That self-consciousness can be calculated, that self-consciousness mm-hmm. can be the result of calculating, are all assumptions, none of which anybody has ever figured out how to assess whether they're true or not. Mm-hmm. The base experience of inceptual thinking would therefore indeed concern beings in the sense of contemporary human beings, their situation, and thus the reflection of humans on themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what inceptual thinking is. Mm-hmm. So he raises some questions. He opens some doors. He talks about what we're going to have to think more about. Go ahead.
Yeah. And like logic, you would put in that, right? With the matter of calculation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you still see it today. Like, I mean, this is 1930.
Yeah. Totally.
And in the last 100 years, there's been especially in the last 20 years, 30 years, there's been a huge flourishing of books on consciousness. What mm-hmm. is consciousness? Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, 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 because there's, in my view, there's a whole lot of drivel written about on this topic. But one of the central themes of consciousness studies is has been ignited by and remains indebted to, you know, neurobiology,
mm-hmm.
neural networks, neural systems, artificial intelligence. I mean, you know, machine. Mm-hmm. So it's thinking about self-consciousness. You know, the computer has opened up, you know, apparently a whole lot of, you know, new gateways to understanding self-consciousness,
mm-hmm.
Which is, in my view, laughable, only because, you know, if you're going to invent a toy like a computer, which is a great toy, how that necessarily becomes a doorway to better understanding self-consciousness rather than just being yet another metaphor for what self-consciousness
yes.
could be.
Yeah.
Is a little, and often in all these books, the idea of the computer as a metaphor for self-consciousness, as opposed to the computer as a formulation of self-consciousness
mm-hmm.
is lost.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
Yeah, cool. This train of thought is not incorrect and yet is untrue. Inasmuch as history and historical meditation bear and dominate the human being, all meditation is also meditation on oneself. The point, however, is that the meditation to be carried out in inceptual thinking does not take the selfhood of humans as given, as something that can be attained immediately by representing the, quote, I and the we and their situation. For in this way, selfhood is precisely not discovered, but is definitively lost and distorted. Cf. The grounding, Dasein, domain of what is proper, selfhood.
Yeah. So this train of thought is not incorrect and yet is untrue. So this train of thought, which I guess... involves the prior paragraph, which is sort of like that meditation is necessarily meditation on oneself, that therefore we need to discuss self-consciousness, that self-consciousness is not best thought of as a calculation. This train of thought is not incorrect, meaning this train of thought, I mean, in a sense what he's saying is this train of thought that attempts to determine self-consciousness through various calculations is not incorrect and yet is untrue. In a way, he's saying exactly what I just said. Mm-hmm. It's not incorrect because it is a metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The calculation of self-consciousness as a reflection of neural networks
mm-hmm.
is not incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Self-consciousness is a reflection of neural networks. But it's not necessarily true
mm-hmm.
that self-consciousness is a neural network.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different ways of thinking about that. Inasmuch as history and historical meditation bear and dominate the human being. So history and historical meditation bear, meaning give birth to,
mm-hmm.
and dominate the human being. So the human being is dominated by history and historical meditation. All meditation is meditation on oneself.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, he's saying that the human being is so essentially originated by history and by historical meditation, that meditation has to be meditation on oneself,
mm-hmm.
that there's no getting out of the history and the historical meditation mm-hmm. that bears us and dominates us. And I would say the simpler way to think of that is we are the product of time. That time is the time that bears ourself over time. And so to meditate on whatever there is we think there might be to meditate on is to simply do the only thing we can do, which is think through time as the, in a sense, conduit or carriage of ourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's no getting out of time,
mm-hmm.
and ourself is time.
Mm-hmm.
The point, however, is that the meditation to be carried out in inceptual thinking does not take the selfhood of humans as given. So, very important here. When he talks about meditation and inceptual thinking, which are the same thing, important point is that we don't take the selfhood of humans as given. So there's no already there-ness of selfhood when we meditate. It's not something that can be attained immediately by representing the I and the we and their situation. So you can't just say, okay, the I is there and it's in a situation, and the we is there and it's in a situation, and therefore there is human selfhood. Mm-hmm. Okay? Because in this way, selfhood is precisely not discovered, but is definitively lost and distorted. Put quite simply, this is just my distinction between identity and self. Mm-hmm. To identify the I, or what he says, represent the I, or identify the we, or represent the we, or attribute identity to the I or to the we, has nothing to do with self, and in fact, loses and distorts the self to do that. So when we're talking about selfhood, the selfhood of the human being, it is definitely not attained through envisioning or representing the identity of the I and the identity of the we and the identity of their situation. Mm-hmm. It's a different thing, this self that we're supposed to meditate on. So what is it? Mm-hmm. How do we get at it? What is it? How do we know it? Well, let's keep reading.
The meditation of inceptual thinking is, rather, so original that it first asks how the self is to be grounded, in whose domain, quote, we, you and I, in each case, come to ourselves. Thus, it is problematic whether, through reflection on, quote, us, we do find ourselves, i.e., ourselves, and consequently, whether the projection of Dasein has anything at all to do with the clarification of, quote, self-consciousness.
Yeah, put it in another way. The most important question is, can we actually find self in identity? Mm. And can Dasein, which is in a sense self, does it have anything to do with the clarification of what self-consciousness is? Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important idea, mm-hmm, in determining the difference between identity and self. Go ahead.
It is indeed in no way settled that the, quote, self is ever determinable by means of a representation of the ego.
Yeah, again, representation of the ego is identity.
Yeah.
The ego is this via representation of, mm-hmm, it as, mm-hmm, an ego, and that becomes therefore an identity. Mm-hmm. Ego is X. But there's no way to settle that the self is ever determinable by means of that establishment of an identity. In fact, I would say it is not, mm-hmm, or at least it seems very difficult to figure out how it is. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Instead, it must be acknowledged that selfhood first arises out of the grounding of Dasein, a grounding that is carried out as an appropriation of the belonging to the call.
Okay, so here we finally have a hint as to where this self might be found and what it might be. It first arises out of the grounding of Dasein. It's the grounding of Dasein is Dasein going down into and being appropriated by Bang. And that grounding is carried out as an appropriation, again, of the belonging to the call. Dasein answers the call, recognizes itself as belonging to the call, accepts its appropriation by Bang, and in that grounding that the appropriation establishes, the self emerges. It's a very, mm-hmm, interesting, cogent, and detailed description of what the self might be, or at least where it might come from. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Accordingly, the openness and grounding of the self arise out of and as the truth of Bang.
Yeah, which is what I just said.
CF, the grounding, Dasein, domain of what is proper, selfhood. Neither the differently intended dissection of the essence of the human being, nor an indication of other modes of being of this being, all these would in themselves merely serve to improve anthropology, can here bring forth meditation on oneself. Instead, the question of the truth of being is what prepares the domain of that selfhood in which humans, we, first come to ourselves through historical actions and accomplishments and in the configuration of a people.
So there are variously differently intended dissections of the essence of the human being. Mm. Differently intended just means different sciences, different goals, different intellectual goals carry out various dissections of the essence of the human being. What is the human being? Well, anthropology has an answer. Psychology has an answer. Sociology has an answer. Evolutionary biology has an answer. Religion has an answer. Liberals have an answer. Conservatives have an answer. Blah, blah, blah. Differently intended dissections, right? These differently intended dissections do not bring forth meditation on oneself, nor does an indication of other modes of being of this being. So, nor if we just say, well, the human being has all these modes of being, and he gives an example here, these different modes of being of this human being would just serve to improve anthropology, mm-hmm. meaning expand the field of anthropology and give it more data. Mm-hmm. But it's still just anthropology, which is a gathering of human artifacts and stories, not an analysis of human being. None of this brings forth meditation on oneself. Instead, the question of the truth of being is what prepares the domain of selfhood, of that. The question of the truth of being is what prepares the domain of that selfhood in which humans first come to themselves. So what he says is, instead of differently intended dissections, and instead of an expanded anthropology, what we need is the question of the truth of being, because that will prepare the domain of that selfhood in which humans first come to themselves. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Through historical actions and accomplishments and the configuration of a people. Mm-hmm. And by people there, he doesn't mean tribe. He means the configuration of the people that are human beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Human beings are a people,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to elm trees and lizards and the stars. Yeah, go ahead.
To be sure, what is proper to Dasein as grounded in selfhood can at first be indicated transitionally in relation to the previous egological self-consciousness and only in relation to it. Dasein as in each case one's own. In this connection, it is to be borne in mind that even this egological self-consciousness assumed through Kant and German idealism a very different form, one in which there is co-posited an assignment to the quote we, to the historical, and to the absolute. Moreover, there is immediately given with Dasein a transposition into the open to wish to find quote subjectivism here is, apart from anything else, always superficial.
What is proper to Dasein as grounded in selfhood, so Dasein is grounded in selfhood, can at first be indicated transitionally in relation to the previous egological self-consciousness and only in relation to it. Dasein as in each case one's own.
Is that French there?
Je minus, yeah, it is. Je minus, yeah, yeah. What he's really saying is, what's proper to Dasein is a self that is one's own, this is different than an egological self-consciousness, meaning egological, lovely word. just means that thinking about self-consciousness as the logical space of a universal ego, that is a formulative template for considering a standardized, abstract notion of self-consciousness that has an ego hovering somewhere in the middle of it, which is antithetical to what Heidegger is trying to get at, which is a Dasein, which is one's own, meaning it's oneself, and it is separate from such broad, ego-logical, self-conscious considerations. In this connection, it is to be borne in mind, that even this ego-logical self-consciousness, even this abstract, ego-centered self-consciousness realm, which German idealism has Kant, it assumed a different form in German idealism, one in which there is co-posited an assignment to the we, to the historical and to the absolute. So this ecological self-consciousness has had various forms. And in German idealism, it has been assigned to a we, as in we all have it, to the historical, as in it's something that has existed over time and has endowed us, and to the absolute. It is transcendental and absolute. Moreover, there is immediately given with Dasein a transposition into the open. To wish to find subjectivism here is, apart from anything else, always superficial. You're not going to find, so this subjective versus objective. To find subjectivism in an ego-logical self-consciousness that is historical, absolute, and assigned to the we is really silly, he's saying. There's nothing subjective about any of that. It's all been objectified. Mm-hmm. It's all presented as objective knowledge. So what he's really saying is we can come up with all these formulations and mappings of an ego-logical self-consciousness that is absolute, that is endowed to us, that is part of our general nature as a human being. But none of this gets anywhere near to really touching on or enlightening us to the proper, singular, unique ownness of Dasein and the subjective, the truly subjective. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's nice. The meditation of inceptual thinking concerns us, ourselves, and yet does not. It does not concern us so as to bring out from us the prescriptive determinations, but it does concern us as historical beings and concerns us specifically in the plight of the abandonment by being, at first decline in the understanding of being and then forgetting of being. It concerns us who thus are initially posited in our exposure amid beings. It concerns us in this manner in order that we find our way beyond ourselves to selfhood.
Wow. So meditation concerns us, and yet it does not. So how does it concern us and how does it not? It does not concern us so as to bring out from us the prescriptive determinations. So meditation doesn't concern us as a thing that is going to bring forth or expose the prescriptive determinations of our consciousness. Mm-hmm. Meaning we're not meditating in order to find the warp and woof of those formulations that are absolute, metaphysical, and determinative. Mm-hmm. It does concern us, however, as historical beings, beings who are born forth by time, from time, and it concerns us specifically in the plight of the abandonment by being. So again, the abandonment by being is that we now live in a world of beings that have no being because we've never even really determined what their being might be. And this abandonment by being first takes place as a decline in the understanding of being. So Heidegger would say over thousands of years, there's been a severe decline in the understanding of what being is, and ultimately, this understanding has declined so far that we've just simply forgotten being. Mm-hmm. And it concerns us, who thus are initially posited in our exposure among beings. We are initially posited in our exposure amid beings. A human being is initially posited only by being exposed to and amid beings. And it concerns us in this manner in order that we find our way beyond ourselves to selfhood. Mm. So it concerns us that we find a way out of identity, out of prescriptive determinations, out of absolute objectivity posing as subjectivity, out of egological self-consciousness, right? Out of an assignment to the we, right? Mm-hmm. It concerns us that we escape these things, this world that I call identity, and that we transpose ourselves into the open, and that we find our way beyond ourselves, out of ourselves, into selfhood. So selfhood becomes a quested thing. Mm-hmm. It becomes not, I mean, we think of self, well, self is the most obvious thing. It's there, it is with us. I'm a self, I have a self, blah, blah, blah. No. Mm-hmm. Self self requires a quest. Self requires answering a call. Self requires being appropriated by bang. Self is something that you must escape a million webs of egological self-consciousness in order to find. And the assumption that yourself is just sitting there for you all the time and you're just sort of working with it is a trick. Mm. You're actually just working with identity, with something completely different than self, in fact, inimical to self, in fact, destructive of self. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The transitional character of inceptual thinking makes this ambiguity unavoidable, as if at issue here were an anthropologically existential reflection in the usual sense. In truth, however, every step is borne by the question of the truth of being.
Yeah, the transitional character of inceptual thinking. So inceptual thinking is about transitioning into the open, transitioning from ourselves to selfhood, transitioning from identity to self. This ambiguity, and I'm not sure what ambiguity he's referring to. I think he might referring to the ambiguity between ourselves and selfhood, and which is another way of saying we are confused about what is ourselves and what is our selfhood. Mm. And this transitional character of inceptual thinking makes this ambiguity unavoidable. So this ambiguity between ourselves and selfhood is unavoidable because we're going to transition from one to the other because that's what inceptual thinking is. Mm-hmm. So we're going to encounter this ambiguity just by the nature of our transition. Mm-hmm. As if at issue here were an anthropologically existential reflection in the usual sense. What is at issue here is not an anthropologically existential reflection in the usual sense. We're not just going to meditate. We're not just going to existentially reflect on the artifacts and stories of humans. We're actually going to take steps along, and every step along the way, we are going to be borne along by the question of the truth of bang. That's what's going to guide us from ourselves to selfhood, not just anthropological reflections on ourselves, but actually moving, transitioning through the question of the truth of being. Mm. Go ahead.
The gazing upon ourselves is carried out from a leap ahead into Dasein for the sake of the first meditation. However, there had to be an attempt to set in relief at all, utterly with respect to extreme modes of being of the human being, the difference in kind between Dasein and all, quote, lived experience and, quote, consciousness.
Yeah, so as we gaze upon ourselves in the process of meditation, this practice of meditating on ourselves is carried out from a leap ahead into Dasein. So we must leap into Dasein. And for the sake of the first meditation, however, there had to be an attempt to set in relief at all, utterly with respect to extreme modes of being the human being, the difference in kind between Dasein. Yeah, so the first meditation is really to think about what the difference between Dasein and lived experience and consciousness is. That's the first meditation. And what he's saying is, I've been meditating on that for like 29 sections now. Right? Yeah. That's the first meditation, to figure out the difference between Dasein and lived experience and consciousness. Mm-hmm. Now that we know that difference, we must now leap ahead into Dasein and begin to gaze upon ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The temptation is strong to believe that the entire meditation in the first published half of Being in Time is limited to the sphere of anthropology, one that merely takes a peculiar direction.
Yeah, the first half of my book, let me point out, Being in Time, is not just an anthropology. It doesn't just take a particular direction, a peculiar direction in thinking about human being. It actually tries to invent an entirely new direction, which is the direction of Dasein, away from lived experience and consciousness and toward the openness of Bang and the question of the truth of Bang. Mm-hmm.
Okay, end of section.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what? I love this kind of stuff. I mean, to me, this is like gold. Heidegger, classic golden Heidegger. I mean, just, I would say, you know, there's just, I think what I find so amazing about him is, it's like these things, these constructs, these ideas, these ideologies have existed for a long time, when he came along. And the way he opens up new perceptions into standard templates of thought is really startling. Like he's charting courses through lands that I don't think we ever knew existed, or they were buried under assumptions that we didn't even know were assumptions. Mm-hmm. They were buried under thought structures, constructs of thought. It's not even that we took them for granted. We just didn't even know they were there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who would ever think that this distinction between an ego-logical self-consciousness and a Dasein, what does that mean? What could that possibly be? And it turns out to be a distinction that is so integral to, liberation. And self-becoming, and more, maybe even more interestingly, I mean, there's just a lot of talk right now about, well, you need to meditate, or let's meditate, or there's meditation, or we're going to do meditation. Heidegger's giving a really almost like an engineer's approach to the way meditation needs to work into the structure of the history of the self and thought and consciousness. It's so intricate and detailed and so grounded in this long philosophical tradition of thinking about the self and consciousness and thought, that it just opens up totally new horizons. And, I'm excited about it because it's to me, it's adding detail and verbiage to this distinction between identity and self. And it's setting up paths of liberation that never existed before. Mm-hmm. They weren't there. I think ultimately the big question that a lot of people probably need to be asking, or are asking, or even I'm asking, is, what do I do with this? Mm-hmm. How does this really apply in my daily life? How does this apply in my liberative efforts, how does this really make a difference to me?
Mm-hmm. And your answer is...
Well, like I said, I think that kind of the most important thrust of this passage is the idea that the self is a questable object. Uh-huh. That we need to upend all the ways we think about our spirituality, our consciousness, our psychology, our relationship to ourself, the presence that we call self-being, and realize that that whole domain, that whole architecture, the long, massive laundry list of things that we ascribe to our inner life, are fragments, fictions, shadows, and in a sense, false facets of a egological self-consciousness that is, we've come to believe, can be rendered through calculation, mm-hmm. but cannot be. Mm-hmm. And we are lacking a self. Mm-hmm. We think, in a sense, the most obvious word, the most intimate word, the most taken for granted word, me, mm-hmm. is the farthest thing away from us. Mm-hmm. And so that sets up, what difference does this, any of this make to me? What do I do with it? Well, what you do with it is you start to see every day, all the time, in every thought that you have, in everything that everybody says, that people say, in every structure and excuse and reason and description and anthropology and psychology and sociology and philosophy and religion and everything, the whole scaffolding of human discourse, you need to see it as this kind of calculated egological self-consciousness space that is, as he says right there, hiding, distorting, and destroying yourself. And you need to figure out a way out of it. Mm-hmm. You need to figure out a way to think different than it. You need to use meditation to break through it, to deconstruct it, to escape it, in order to find yourself. And so what are you looking for? You're looking for, as he says, via a question of the truth of bang, what is the truth of bang? You're looking for that appropriated Dasein that is answering the call to be in the truth of bang. You know, mm-hmm. that's what you're looking for. So you're questing, you're living in an abandonment by being, you don't have a self, you've lost yourself, your self has been taken from you. How do you find yourself? He's giving us hints. You need to keep questing for that self. You need to keep reaching out for that self because you are, in a sense, swaddled, buried, and laminated in identitarian muck. And figuring out what that muck is, how it has a grasp on you, the many manifestations of its hold on you, is an everyday, by-the-minute task. It's not something you can just say, well, this is it. Do A, B, C, and you'll have X, Y, Z. That's not the way it works, because this is meditation. So we now learn that meditation is being transposed and transited and transitioned across out of ourselves into selfhood.
Yeah.
It feels very unabstract to me. I think it sounds really abstract. But to me, it feels super unabstract. Mm. To me, it feels like what I'm really doing is I'm describing like a hike. Mm. And that hike is meditation. And I'm really just talking about one step, two step, three step, four step. I'm talking about the things I see. I'm talking about the trees. I'm talking about the hills. I'm talking about turning left. I'm talking about going down into the gully and then out of the gully. I'm talking about going over that little peak there. And then I'm talking about turning right at the cabin. And then I'm talking about finding a clearing. And it's like the way you would describe to somebody how to get to the top of a mountain. That's what I'm just, so it just feels really like it feels like the gears of my mind as I think about being free of my thoughts. Hmm. So maybe for other people, I don't know, it would feel abstract or it would feel like a kind of a lot of formulation, but to me it feels super practical. I don't know. What do you think?
I think I feel like he does a really great job of pointing out the emptiness of how we've thought or how I've thought about the self.
Mm.
And I think, like, just the more we go through the book, the more, like, it's really lovely how he does that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a totally different perspective and mm-hmm. all these things that, like, you would not normally criticize. Like, why would you criticize lived experience?
Yes.
Or why would you question lived experience or consciousness, you know,
yeah.
especially
yeah.
on Instagram? That's all, you know, it's yeah. all the rage. But he's just constantly like pointing out that it's a sort of empty, it's sort of empty words or
yeah.
kind of
yeah, that's
correctness
right.
or objectiveness. It's just, it doesn't, there's not really there, right? So.
Yeah, it's really powerfully said. I mean, I think, you know, he says things, you know, to him, anthropology is like a pejorative.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, exactly.
Like, oh, it's yeah. just more anthropology. Wow, you know,
yeah.
I mean, most people, anthropology is a revered subject.
Right.
And it's an interesting field, but Heidegger's like it doesn't
yeah.
get us there.
Yeah, and I feel like sort of like you were saying, it's sort of maybe a metaphor or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, I think we were talking last podcast about like sort of like things in biology or and I'm sure this is true too of like brain neuroscience where you're like, oh, okay, because of this chemical doing this, it means this, but in a way that's
right.
just a total like
right, as if you've learned something by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a metaphor. What was it, metaphor? And yeah, analogy is just like this, it doesn't really, it's not really,
it's real. Actually just rephrasing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, like or, you can say Leah walked across the room, or you can say a woman walked across the room,
right,
or you can say the daughter of
right.
you know, Bob walked across the room,
yeah.
or you can say the mother of, you know,
yeah.
Melissa walked. It's all
yeah,
there's so many
yeah.
ways
yeah.
to say your name.
Yeah.
And so many of these new descriptions of consciousness are just rephrasings.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's so hard to find a book that like doesn't just rephrase
yeah.
in another way.
Or as he put it, it's so hard to find a book that isn't incorrect.
Yeah.
But it is not true.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
or it's
nice,
or, but
yeah.
you know, I mean, it's hard to find a book, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, the response to these books now, you know, my response to most books now is going to be, well, it's not incorrect, but it's not true. You know, I mean, it's perfectly feasible what it's saying. It's perfectly possible. It's perfectly metaphorical.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's the truth.
Yeah. Well, I think I really like that, but I don't feel the sort of clarity that you seem to have about, you know, describing the hike in terms of how to meditate or how,
mm-hmm.
and I think maybe it's partly just because I don't have a grasp yet of what is the appropriation of the event,
mm-hmm.
what is the grounding of Dasein, like
mm-hmm.
they're very lovely words and poetic
yeah,
words, but to
but you're
me,
right. they're still very undefined,
they're still really abstract
very,
and hard to kind of
I would
get.
Agree.
So I feel like, for me, I feel like it's like the whole sort of like the inadequacy of the first beginning is really, as he keeps going and kind of repeating and circling on topics, like it really makes sense.
Yeah.
Although I can't say it's always easy, but I think I like what you say too, that it's like a daily moment by moment thing.
Yeah.
Cause like when we read it, I'm like, oh my God, it makes so much sense. Why would I ever worry about whatever, you know, whatever thing that somebody said that like is obviously a being abandoned by being, like, duh, when we're reading it. But then in the moment, it's a lot harder. So I think that is part of what makes it very all the time in the moment. But even though it makes sense, it's still hard for me to apply consistently. And then the other option, yeah, I just think, I'm not sure if we've gotten to that part in the book in a way where he really gets into what bang and appropriation and all these things are. Like, I feel like we're still just building the space.
Are you saying you know that section is coming?
Because
I know you've read ahead in the book.
Yeah.
Like there's more description of all that later?
I think so.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure
I would agree with
you.
I mean, a lot of times when I say those phrases, I'm like, yeah, I have a vague sense for what those mean. Or I would say I almost have like an experiential inkling of what those things are. Like, but you're right. I'm not sure I could go on and on about describing it in detail. So,
but maybe it's like what you were saying earlier, like the first meditation is just understanding the difference between Dasein and lived experience. So maybe that is just where we're supposed to be at this point in the journey.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, I kind of am curious to hear what you have to say about the, like, how can it make so much sense here on the page and when you're explaining it, when I'm thinking about it, but then it's still the objectiveness, the egological is still totally enrapturing and can still like knock me over, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, you've spent what, 100 hours with this book?
Yeah.
And you've spent how many hours being alive and being trained in the egological self-consciousness?
Yeah.
In being told that self-consciousness is a product of calculation?
Yeah.
In being told that lived experience is where validity emerges? In being told that you are essentially provided selfhood by your admittal to the we?
Mm-hmm.
That in abstract formulations of collective consciousness, there is subjectivity. I mean, you've been told all these things, and not just in a college course, but as a 3-year-old and as a 5-year-old and as a 7-year-old and on and on. I mean, I saw the word hermeneutics ascribe, like if you search, there's this thesaurus I use, this online thesaurus called relatedwords.org. And if you search the word hermeneutics, the first word that comes up is Heidegger, Martin Heidegger. And hermeneutics just means the art of interpretation. And that's in a sense what Heidegger does, is he's interpreting things like literary interpretation, but he's interpreting, you know, the entire history of philosophy. And, you know, I think as you think about your education and you think about what your family told you and what your friends told you and what the books told you and what the media told you and what everything told you, a lot of it can appear as innocuous. A lot of it can just appear as information, or the details of becoming an informed human being, or the minutiae of becoming scrupulous and moral, and a valued and exemplary member of a community. These are incredibly complicated systemic restructurings of what is initially a totally amorphous, wild, insane, instinctual organism, you know, the human being. And then it is slowly over time shaped and grafted and implanted upon and turned into something functional. Mm-hmm. Well, that process, which is years and years and years in the making, is a lot about what Heidegger's talking about. And what he's trying to say is, let's interpret that process, how that happened, where we came, how did we come to think that lived experience provides selfhood? How did we come to think that we have a self when we don't? Mm-hmm. How did we come to, you know, think that we can arrive at self-consciousness through calculation? These are these are profoundly basic ideas in the way that our entire society functions. Mm-hmm. So he's interpreting our intellectual framework with these generative core ideas. And so, you know, how is it that you can't arrive at a real sense of living what Martin Heidegger is saying? Well, you've been living something else for a very long time. So it takes a long time. It takes a lot of meditation. It takes a reformulation of yourself. And in a sense, you know, I don't know, you're somewhere in the middle of your life. I won't expose your age, but you're somewhere around there, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll understand Heidegger when you've lived as long as you've already lived. Mm-hmm. You know, it might take that long. Took you X years to be where you are now. Mm-hmm. Now you find Heidegger. You've got the exact same more years to kind of, for that to become a new. But, you know, I also think the more throughout the day, and maybe more importantly, the more as you think about the things you think about, continually try to conduit through Heidegger's perspective, Heidegger's hermeneutics, how that stuff might be thought of through Heidegger's filter, you know? And then you'll start seeing gaps and you'll start being thrust into the open.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a real like vice grip that the first beginning has like on morality or scrupulousness, like you said. There's a real like that's what's correct. That's what you should do, like a religious zealotness, I guess.
Or as I would say, well, it's not incorrect, but it's also not true.
What'd you say?
It's not incorrect.
Right.
But it's not true.
Right.
So it is correct.
Yeah.
But it's not true.
Yeah. The morality of that. Yeah, exactly.
And it's grip on you, as you say. It's vice grip on you.
Right. Yeah, so I just think there's this element to which, like, stepping outside of it, even though it seems more truthful, is scary.
Yeah.
I guess that might be a lot like where he talks about the leap and the abyss and that kind of stuff. It does feel sort of like setting out into the desert, moving to the desert.
Yeah, so I spoke about that a little bit in my little extracurricular activity. And you know,
to say what that is?
No. We'll talk about that later. But this question of safety and being being kind of surrounded by comfort and a sense of belonging to something that is secure. And being called out, being called outward toward, as I said, the questable object, which is the self. I think that this idea that you're very safe where you are now, and that if you quest outward for that self that you don't have, that has been denied you, you're entering dangerous territory. Mm-hmm. That's propaganda.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. As you said that, I was just thinking that.
That's a lie.
Yeah. So I'm not safe where I'm
where
at.
Where you actually are is where it's not safe. Yeah. And I think that our talk about anxiety makes that really clear.
Yeah.
How safe are you actually?
Yeah.
Without a self. And this quest that you're supposed to go on to find yourself is a quest to safety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why? I would say because where you're at now is you are in the ultimate vulnerable, fragile, exposed position, which is that everything you are and think you are,
mm-hmm.
and everything you try to be in the absence of actual choicefulness is being controlled by a calculated ego logic self-consciousness that is simply a reflection of the we, the identitarian superstructure that has made you what you are.
Mm-hmm.
You are in the ultimate position of danger.
Yeah.
Because you aren't controlling your arms.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't controlling your thoughts. You're not controlling what wars you're involved in. You're not controlling how you might defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You are a puppet. What's more endangered than a puppet? Nothing. So going to your, again, I'm not talking about you particularly, mm-hmm. I'm just talking about people.
Mm-hmm.
Going on this quest to find yourself is, I don't know, to use a cheesy description, it's going on a quest to find like your Excalibur,
mm-hmm.
your sword of infinite power. And without that sword of infinite power, you are definitely not safe.
Yeah.
But when you have that sword of infinite power, that unique own self, you are finally safe.
Yeah.
So even that idea that you're safe now and going on this scary quest will be unsafe.
Right.
You've been tricked totally. Into thinking that.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true.
Which well, I think puts fire under your butt because actually, if you flip it and realize you're not safe now and you better get out there and find yourself and get safe, well, then the time to go is now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also, like, I don't really like where I'm at now. So that's another reason.
Yeah. Well, and you know why you don't like where you are now?
Because it's dangerous.
Because you're not safe. You don't feel safe.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Do you feel safe in the presence of yourself?
Yeah. Not really.
No.
Yeah.
No. I think that's one of the issues.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what anxiety is feeling scared of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So, but you can't actually be scared of yourself.
Why not?
Well, if you're so-called scared of yourself, you're actually just involved in an identitarian death loop that somebody else set you up as.
Right, right.
It's not yourself.
Yeah.
How can yourself scare yourself? Yourself is yourself.
Yeah.
Yourself has only your self interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you lack that self
mm-hmm.
that you get into this messed up relationship with something that's not yourself, that's claiming to be yourself, that's abusing yourself in a way that no self would ever abuse itself.
Yeah.
So once you find that self, it is the ultimate safety because there's only one ally, true ally, that you have,
mm-hmm.
and that's yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find that relationship with yourself, you will feel eternal safety
mm-hmm.
because there's no more enemies posing as yourself in yourself,
right.
abusing yourself in the name of yourself, which is not yourself.
Yeah, right. Totally. I like that a lot. I mean, that's like, I never thought of it like that. That's really, yeah.
Yeah. So nice passage, right?
Yeah.
Do you have more totally. To say, or are we done?
No, I have nothing more to say.
Beautiful. Thank you. Wonderful talk. Thank you. Beautiful section.
Yeah.
We read two sections, didn't we?
No, just one. It was 30.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, great.
It was a good, perfect length
it's
for
a perfect
an
length.
Episode.
That's right. You said you wanted it to be an hour.
Was it?
Nah, I think we're like an hour and 10, which I think is fine.
That's still pretty good.
The reason
I want to be an hour is because our baby is now waking up every hour.
That's right. We have to get to bed earlier.
At night.
No, we do.
And it's crazy. So.
All right. Well, with that, good night. Or
good luck.
In your case, go
have
to sleep
nap.
For an hour and then wake up and then go to sleep for another 45 minutes
exactly.
and wake up and go to sleep. Yeah. Tough times, but beautiful times too.
Yes.
She is the heaven and the light. And throughout all night long, she is the light. She is the light in the night. That's what she is. She is the light in our dark night. May we never sleep. All right.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Choya podcast. For more information, visit leapingchoya.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.